Hey, thanks, Kane. 806 FM Talk 106.5 at Mobile Morning. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Love to hear from you. And lots to talk about this hour. We also will check in with Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson coming up at 8:30 to talk about a couple things. Number one, a call he made to CEOs of area hospitals yesterday that told him they have at least 50% capacity open at all area hospitals. We'll talk about that. Also, the curfew for the city of Mobile, how that enforcement's gone. I saw one or two stories up with arrests having been made, or at least tickets, citations being given, not arrests, citations over the over this question about the curfew. All right, and I mentioned earlier last hour that we would get a discussion of what happens July 14th, of course, where that's the postponed date governor made for the primary runoff. And the man that knows all this, and it's his job to know all this, Secretary of State of the State of Alabama, John Merrill, joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Sean, great to be with you this morning, my friend.
Hey, it's a pleasure, and so many questions here. First of all, let's just go through what we all do in Alabama when we haven't talked to somebody in a while and with what's going on. How are you? How's your family? Everybody making it? Doing fine?
Hey, everybody's great and excited to have my daughter home for a few days. She's an international flight attendant with a major airline. She lives in New York, and she's been home for a couple of days now, and we're excited to have her home, because she's on the front line to this thing, being a flight attendant and doing what they do. My son works for a major restaurant corporation and just moved about 2 weeks ago from Houston to Savannah. So he's over there, but they're doing great, and Cindy's doing great. She comes down and joins me in Montgomery 3 days a week, and she just went home last night, and then I'll go home today and spend the weekend in Tuscaloosa. Then we'll head back to Montgomery again to do the people's work on Monday.
How's it affecting? Like, I've been to your office. You let me do my show out of your office before. How's the social distancing? How are all those the stay at home order from the governor? How's that affect that part, that wing there at the Capitol?
Well, John, you know, we're running not a full staff, but we're running full bore, and we are taking care of business for the people with the work that we do in elections, work we do in business services, meeting families' needs through our international adoption program. We're just trying to make sure that we're doing everything that we need to do to keep our part of the state and the state administration running and moving the way that it's supposed to be, and that smoothly. Things have gone extraordinarily well. Our people are running in shifts primarily. On any day, you will have about six people that will be working in the executive office, and currently we have between three and four working every day. In elections, we're running alternate patterns for our team to come in, doing the same thing in business services, just trying to make sure that we're continuing to meet the needs of new businesses and existing industry and business as they need our support.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about, I guess you're using technology because you usually use four tires and a steering wheel. I know you're all over the state with great routine, as is your nature, but you probably can't do that. You can't meet with the groups anymore.
Well,
you did.
Oddly enough, that you mentioned that yesterday was the regular monthly meeting of Leadership Mobile, and I was supposed to be down in your fair county and visiting with those outstanding young people yesterday afternoon, but that was interrupted because of the coronavirus. So we did my presentation, which was an hour and 10 minutes, on Zoom. And that platform has enabled a number of people to be able to interact with a speaker, unlike you can do on Facebook Live or FaceTime or anything like that. So I was encouraged to be able to spend some quality time with those outstanding students enrolled in that program, but it's not the same as being there with them.
And we're all having to negotiate this this new coronavirus world that we're living in. And what about that on the election front with Governor Ivey postponing the runoff, you know, with your suggestion, Strong, you talk about postponing the runoff to July 14th. What are y'all, do you think, first of all, what's your gauge? Do you think we're going to be able to pull off that date?
Let me tell you how we got there, first of all.
Okay.
You know, last year in 2019, one of the things that we did when we were evaluating our legislative agenda was to look at what would happen if we had a state of emergency. And it became clear that there were no laws in place that give an individual or an entity the authority to move the election or to postpone an election date if it was necessary. And so we had legislation we took before the body, and frankly, Sean, I had two members of the legislature tell me last year, look, this is not something we need to consider. This is not something that's ever going to happen, so we don't need to worry about it because it's never happened in the history of the state. Well,
guess what?
Roll tide.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes.
So anyway, what we did, we brought that bill back again this year. We offered it in the House. David Standridge, who's a former probate judge from Blount County, represents that area. Also, Donnie Chastain, who represents Geneva and Houston counties, was carrying it in the Senate for us, and it's in the process, but we had not reached a point where we could get it passed before the coronavirus jumped on all of us. So it was incumbent on me to go to Attorney General Steve Marshall and ask for an Attorney General's opinion talking about what would happen to our election in this particular situation. And General Marshall agreed with us when we told him we felt like the governor had the authority to move the election during the time of a stated emergency that she had declared. And so according to Title 31-9-1, the governor does have that authority. We made the decision to make a presentation to the governor, offering our proposal on how we needed to change the date, what other things need to go into effect. She agreed with us almost down the line. And there were some things that she wanted to do that we were not in favor of, and some things that we wanted to do that she was not fully supportive of. But she's the head coach, and we are on the team. And one of the reasons that we selected the date, July 14th, is because that's the last possible date that you can select and still not interfere with the November 3rd general election. So another section of the code book, Title 17-9-3, gives the Secretary of State rulemaking authority to modify some of the election standards that are in place when it's appropriate during a declared state of emergency. So one of those that we looked at strongly was the absentee election process. And the reason, Sean, is because some people had already begun making absentee applications for the March 31st runoff. Some people had already voted absentee for the March 31st runoff. And I thought it was best for us to extend that deadline all the way out to January the 9th, uninterrupted. So anyone can make application for an absentee ballot if they're a registered voter. They can make absentee ballot application up until July the 9th. They can download an absentee ballot application from our website at alabamavotes.gov, or they can contact their local circuit clerk and ask that person to mail them a copy of the absentee ballot application. Once they successfully complete it and return it with a copy of the valid photo ID, at that point they'll be successfully registered as an absentee voter, and they'll have a ballot mailed to them. They can send it back in. Now, Sean, some people have a question about, since we're an excuse state when it comes to absentees, what should I mark? I may not be out of the county, or I may not have to work a double shift, or I may not be sick. So that rulemaking authority has given me the prerogative to establish a reason, and the reason we've established is the one that says I am ill or infirmed, and I will be unable to go to my regular polling site on election day. If they mark that box, they'll be given a ballot without any question.
Okay, so you already answered my second question. So that is available to folks. Let's hope, Secretary of State, that it's next month we're getting back to normal here at home.
Yes,
but
sir.
I mean, there's a lot of unknowns here. So if we're looking at, we're looking at July, and we don't know what's happening there, people could apply for an absentee ballot that would be, like you said, afraid of illness or their infirmity and going to a place where there's more than 10 people together.
No doubt. And we want them to do what they feel comfortable doing.
And so,
I think it's important to note, if we're able to have in-person voting, and we will have polls open, all 1,980 polling sites will be open on election day, July 14th. But we want the voters to know. We want the poll workers to know, the inspectors to know. We've made preparation for them. We will have, for our poll workers and our inspectors, we'll have masks, we'll have non-latex gloves, we'll have sanitary wipes available, we'll have disinfectant available, we'll be able to have sanitizer available for voters as they come in to make sure that their hands are clean when they take possession of the pen, when they're interacting with the poll workers. And we will pay for the restoration of the polling place to put it in the same pre-election condition than it was in prior to the arrival of the voters on election day. We're using our stimulus money from Washington to help take care of that and take care of the needs of our people.
Okay, so you'd come back into the state would contract with somebody to come back into the church or the high school gymnasium or wherever and do that deep sanitizing.
Absolutely, because I think most people will want that to take place.
Sure.
They'll want that as a cover for them to know that they've done all they can to protect their parishioners or their students or their teachers or their community center members, all the folks that will be normally using that particular location on a regular basis. And so we will cover the cost of restoring that, having it cleaned by a professional cleaning service that is recognized to do that kind of work professionally. We're excited about doing that and saving the state that money and saving the individuals that are responsible for those locations that money.
Just joining us, talking to the Secretary of State of Alabama, John Merrill. What about the other side of that, the other side of the table there when we show up to vote? And you and I have talked about it before, and just say what it is. There are mostly older folks that work the polls. I mean, that's true all over the state. What are you telling those folks?
Well, Sean, you are correct. But another thing you need to remember is that in 2019, we passed legislation to allow young people, students that are 16, 17, and 18 years old, to be able to work the polls on Election Day. And we had that administration of that exercise conducted the very first time on March the 3rd. In Etowah County, for example, we had more than 60 of those young people that were working the polls. And those students can do anything that a normal poll worker can do except handle the ballot. Now, if they're 18 years of age and already a registered voter, they can actually work the polls just like a regular poll worker. But we want to encourage that, and especially now with what we're going through.
All right. I want to circle back before we run out of time. So remind folks down here that the absentee process, how's it working? What's that new date?
Well, they can vote absentee, make application for the absentee ballot all the way up until July the 9th. Their ballot has to be returned in person by July 13th or postmarked no later than July the 13th.
All right. So y'all get on it. Get cracking if that applies to you. As always, I appreciate our conversations. And I can only imagine what it's like for you not to be able to go see people in person. So hopefully we get things turned around for your sake and the rest of us here in Alabama so we can get with groups and you can go do what you do best.
Sean, thank you, brother. I've already been to 30 counties before this thing hit us.
I know you.
January the 1st and 119 visits, but we got a lot more to do, brother.
That is for that's for sure. Secretary of State John Merrill, thanks for your time.
Take care.
You take care as well. Y'all, I've been in the man's office. He's got this gigantic framed poster of the state of Alabama, all 67 counties, and he's got pins. And they're just dense all over the map with every trip he takes. It's like, it's pretty cool looking. Man, I have to get, next time he lets me in his office, I'll get a picture of it for you. All right, 8:20, be right back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Morning. Sean and Dalton, Dr. Bill on the way with more on our forecast. We'll keep up to date with traffic with that guy, Kane, as we roll on through this Friday morning. And today should be a pretty day. And tomorrow should be all right. Tomorrow evening through Easter Sunday, possible severe weather associated with Sunday as well. Get more on that coming up in just a little bit. Also, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson joins us in just a couple minutes.
So if you're going to, you know, if you got the kids in the house, you're all quarantining together, and you're going to try to put together some kind of Easter egg hunt.
Maybe
you can get it done on Sunday. You can definitely get it done in the house.
Do you already
Sunday.
Have the stuff? That's the problem that people are dealing with. You know, do you go to the store? Do you risk going to the store to get the stuff to do the Easter egg hunt? And then do you spray all the stuff down? I mean, I'm not alarmist stuff. I'm asking, do you? What do you do? I don't know. And to be frank with you, so we talk about this. We've talked about what's going on with us in this station and, you know, the loss we've had this week and the fact that we're a station that is, we're down to basically four people coming in here, max. Mm-hmm. I had the social distancing. We've been for weeks cleansing everything, but you and I are both separated from our families right now because of what's happened here.
Yep.
And your family has gone to be with your parents,
mm-hmm.
and they're up in Clark County, and I am I'm living at my parents' farmhouse away from my family. And so my daughter was just calling during a break a second ago, and there's a pretty good chance I will not be with my family on Easter.
Same
because
here.
Because of the quarantine that you and I are under. So it stinks. It stinks. It's a tough deal. It's a tough deal that if we'll I'd have to do the watch them do the Easter egg hunt through like a Zoom meeting or a FaceTime or something like that.
Yeah, you know, last year was my daughter's first Easter, and we were able to make it out to Bellengrath Gardens. And,
oh, yeah, y'all got y'all's picture made.
Yeah, I got the picture with the Easter bunny, and I was thinking, how are we going to do that this year? And since I'm quarantining from them, we'll have to do it hopefully here in a couple weeks. But I'm thinking maybe we'll just take a picture, and then I can Photoshop it onto the last year's picture
there you go.
With the Easter bunny, so that we'll have one for every year.
But do it in, like, do one that you do a great job of, and then do one that'd be like like me with using Microsoft Paint and do like just a block.
Draw one in there.
Good stuff. Hey, heads up here. While we're all going through this economy that's so affected by coronavirus, it's always a good time to think about what you're paying in interest rates on your credit card debt. But right now, obviously, every dollar is so very, very important. So I want to tell you about the folks at Lightstream. They can help you with a credit card consolidation loan. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they're delivering. Quickly roll your balances from multiple credit cards into one single monthly loan payment, get a low fixed interest rate, and free up more money in your monthly budget, and say goodbye to credit card bills, and take even more control over your money. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have rates at starting at just 5.95% APR with autopay, and there are absolutely no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. This is posted up over at the website at lightstream.com. This person says, I heard about Lightstream on the radio. They made the process very easy and stress-free and really helped us consolidate our debts. Thank you, Lightstream. And y'all can do the same thing. You can apply today to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. Only way to get that discount is to go to lightstream.com/Sullivan, my last name, LightStream.com/SullivanVan. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Sullivan for more information. All right. We'll read some of these texts here, and I appreciate it. We're still getting so many texts and on social media, well wishes, and I thank you. It's been a tough week. We lost the radio station family friend, and personal friend other than just a coworker. I mean, we are a small bunch of us as it is, so we're a family no matter what. But Brenny Brabner was a man that you'd have to hunt high and low and still not find anybody that didn't love that man once he met him. So it's been sad, but thank you. It does mean something when y'all text or put something on social media. We read all of them, and it does mean a lot to us.
It does, and Rennie, of course, meant a lot to every single one of us here at the station. I had so many conversations with him over the years about family, more than anything. But we also talked about the broadcasting business and all kinds of great conversations. But he was a heck of a storyteller. And yesterday during Midday Mobile, Sean, I loved it so much. You played a couple of the interviews you had with Rennie over this last year, one of those being the UFO sightings.
Classic.
It was a classic.
Classic Rennie Brabner.
And of course, he was the creator and producer of the Moon Pie Minute. And for the future. Right now on our website, we have the Moon Pie Minutes from this year loaded up there. Just go to fmtalk1065.com, click on the big Moon Pie Minute button. It'll take you to that page, and you can listen to all of them from this year.
All right, y'all check it out there, and thank you for all your very kind words. 8:30, coming up, we'll check in with Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson.
FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings. Let's talk with Louie Arata from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louie.
Good morning, Dalton. How are you?
Hey, doing great here at the station. I want to talk about the website, McConnellAutomotive.com, an incredible resource if you're looking for a new or pre-owned vehicle.
That's correct. We've got them all pretty on the website. You can just do everything you really want to do right there. Put the credit app in. We can do everything on the phone. We can bring the car to you. It's going to be clean. We got some steering wheel, plastic steering wheel wraps now. We're going to put them on the car. So try to be proactive around here at McConnell. And like I said, check us out on the website at McConnellAutomotive.com or give us a call at 251-476-4141.
And I got to ask, you said the other day you had one Mardi Gras truck remaining. You still got that truck?
I'm pulling in right now, and I don't see it. And they sold one yesterday, so I'm hoping that was it. We're going to get some more in for next year's Mardi Gras.
There you go. We appreciate it, Louie.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, and let's welcome to the show Mobile's Mayor Sandy Stimson. And Mayor Stimson, thank you for your time.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. And I know, by the way, that's good morning. I know it's good evening because when 9 o'clock each evening, my email chimes and it's an email from Mayor Stimson. That's your wrap up time for your report on the day.
That's right. And that's been very successful. I mean, a lot of people, we've gotten a lot of good comments about that.
It is. I appreciate looking at the recap of the day. Of course, you have the press conferences as well. And there's so much to talk about here. Also, on the side note here, finding time, and I can see your better half in the pictures, and obviously the better influence here on you to go out and give blood. You did that yesterday.
Yeah, and you're definitely right. She is the better half, and I am blessed to have her for 45 years now.
She's a, like mine, tolerant woman. A lot to talk about here. I want to kind of break down, first of all, on we'll get to a lot of questions I have about the health side of this, but watching the reserves, and it was weeks ago that you were talking about this, and Paul Wesch was talking about the reserves the city had and how this was helping mitigate the loss in sales tax revenue for the city of Mobile. How much do we have left, and what's the projected length of that surplus?
So Paul and I actually, he was been working on it and updated me yesterday. And so if thing was static, and by static I mean if we were going to lose the $10 to $12 million every month and we couldn't reduce cost any, then you've got 6 to 7 months, you know, something like 6 months, let's say. And so we really have not dipped into it yet. I feel like that just because of cash that we had on hand from the current operating year, that we have not had to go into the reserve at this point in time.
But that is, there's so many unknowns here, but that could be a possibility, right? After 6 months,
oh,
I mean.
Oh, well, no, it'll happen before 6 months. I mean, once April closes, I mean, we'll have a lot better feel because we're projecting now, and really it's kind of like some of the modeling going on. You know, you're doing the best you can, but you don't have enough figures to really nail it.
I was wondering, in a discussion earlier this week on the show, talking about Montgomery and the fact that maybe it's $1.9 billion that could come to the state of Alabama from the federal government, help them balance the budget. Are y'all in talks? I mean, what would trickle down, if any, to municipalities like Mobile? Is there any of that money that might see it swing here?
Great question, Sean. And obviously, we're very hopeful. You know, the majority of the people in the state of Alabama do live in the 10 largest cities. We actually had corresponding with the 10 mayors last night, and we have a letter that we're sending to the governor with some recommendations for her to consider. There are really not many guidelines that she has to follow. is my understanding of it. So we'll be like, you know, everybody else. We'll be making our case for getting a share of that money, because ultimately most of the expense having to do with this is being borne by, you know, the cities, the major cities. So we're very hopeful that we'll be able to prevail.
I see a question on the text line about this right now, and a question about hazard pay for public safety or MPD. This says MPD officers for Mobile. Where does that stand? Is that now static, or is that ongoing, that conversation?
No. Well, yesterday I received a letter from the chief of police and the fire chief, fire rescue. And anyway, both of them have engaged with their men, and both of them have said they understand the need to not have the hazardous pay, you know, because of what it will do to the, well, call it the city's treasury or a bank account. And, I mean, what a stand-up, good move. I mean, how can you not be proud of our policemen and firemen, you know, for doing that? At least I'm real proud of them, and I'm tremendously grateful for it. And I won't forget what they've done either.
And that's, I mean, we talk about all the frontline workers, and they are many. I mean, I talk about cashiers at the stores that are open as, you know, as part of it as well. But from healthcare workers to public safety, their job is to sometimes violate the 6 feet of separation. I mean, they got to put themselves in close to people when we're telling everybody not to do that.
That's correct. And Sean, it's easy to say that when they became policemen or firemen, you know, they knew that they would be in dangerous situations, but I don't think in anybody's wildest imagination or crystal ball did they think that we'd be dealing with a pandemic. And so it's certainly a game changer, and it will cause everybody to kind of rethink what we're doing.
Now, what about on the healthcare front? You've been talking about the testing. We know what's going on at Ladd People Stadium. Where do we stand now in number of tests, availability of tests, and who can get the test?
Yeah, anybody can get the test. Any and everybody, if they show symptoms. Okay, don't leave out that second part. You've got to be, at this point in time, there are not enough tests just to randomly test the population. So we're testing symptomatic people, but then no one is being turned away, you know, for testing at this point in time. So we have more tests on the way. I'm sure that will broaden. You know, we'll be considering what do we do with our internally within the city, our public services workers. But I know there are a lot of businesses that would like to test their employees, and certainly the hospitals would like to be testing theirs. But with the availability increases, you will see more testing. And when I speak of the availability, I'm really thinking of the antibody test, which is, you know, pretty quickly done, and it tells whether you've either had it or you've developed or had a resistance to it.
Mayor Stimson, I thought you gave an incredible rundown at Tuesday's Mobile City Council meeting regarding the testing. And with so many cities, I mean every city in America right now, fighting for those testing resources, can you talk a little bit about how difficult that's been to get tests into the city?
Well, you know, when it started out, Sean, nobody really knew what all we were dealing with. And it was obvious that the nasal test was the gold standard. That's what everybody wanted, but there were severe limitations on what was available and who had access to them. And then that's when Brad Pitts came up with somebody reached out to him, I think, and said, you know, I have these 5,000 antibody tests, and really without having a protocol of how to use them, Brad just felt like, you know, this is something I need to buy, because we will figure it out how to use them. And that's exactly the test that we've used, and a lot of the healthcare providers have used, you know, to determine whether our people have been exposed to it. So whether it was good fortune that someone called, and then also good fortune that we had Brad Pitts, who just on a hunch or intuition said, let's get them, you know, we're just very fortunate for that. And I cannot say enough good things about Synergy Labs, because like yesterday they tested 170 people at Ladd, and my understanding is they're turning these tests around. Now these are the nasal tests, they turn them around in less than 24 hours, or within 24 hours. what we've been dealing with in the past is somebody could have a test, and you wouldn't know for 7 days, or 6 days, or 5 days, maybe, you know, what the results were. Well, it was hard to be tracking what was going on, you know, whether they whether we had a greater percentage of positives or whether it was falling. But anyway, I feel like right now we're getting the best data that we've had since this began, and we're certainly getting the best test results as far as turnaround time.
I know a little bit of that, the discussion of the data came up on Tuesday, and I want to get back into that when we return with Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson. Remember we talked about what the mayor had to say about the public safety folks that have been tested and the number that had the antibodies versus those people that showed coronavirus over the overall number. Pretty interesting stuff. Coming right back.
We got the message.
FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Continue our conversation with Mobile's Mayor Sandy Stimson, and a lot to talk about here as it's a briefing on top of a briefing on top of a briefing. And Mayor, this changes daily out there. The information does change probably more than once a day.
Absolutely.
You rolled out some numbers. I want to see if this is kind of still the benchmark, though. You rolled out numbers at the city council meeting talking about the testing that was given to public safety. And can you talk about the sample and what the results were?
And, you know, and Director Barber's done an excellent job tracking this along with others helping him. But it was 900 tested. There were, I think, 38 that tested positive, had positive antibodies, you know, showing that they had either had it or was active. And then there were, I think, four now is what we know. And most of these were asymptomatic. Maybe one, if I remember right, one showed some symptoms of it. So if you take the four who actually had it out of the 900, I think that's in the, you know, 0.3% range, something like that.
And those are people that, by the nature of their job, they can't be isolated at home. They are essential services. They are out.
Right. That's exactly right.
So, and the other part of that is, I think, is interesting for people to hear about the antibodies versus the actual cases, because a lot of people think, okay, well, you got to have somebody who's real sick to have the antibodies, but people could have been exposed to this and just done okay, or been just a little bit sick.
Oh, that's exactly right, Sean. Everybody that comes back and it's positive, and they say, I haven't had any symptoms, you know, which is really... I don't know if that's scary. But
it is scary to me.
Certainly, that you're thinking that here I am, I've got the virus, and I'm out and about, and I'm infecting people. But it's been going on, and it's been going on longer than we've been testing.
And it's a tough thing for people to get their heads around. But y'all, you could feel just fine, and be like, I don't need to be at home doing this because I feel just fine, and you could be part of the problem.
That's exactly right, and I think that's why it's spread like it has. Now, there's another connection, and this is not scientific, but one of the things we do know is that because of the travel time between New Orleans and Mobile, there were a lot of Mobilians that had been in New Orleans and, you know, probably contracted it there and brought it back to Mobile. But that's, again, that's how the virus spreads.
That is, and that story over in Louisiana is a whole nother one we've been following. Unreal with the numbers out of Louisiana. Let's talk about some of the projections out there. And I know Dalton had brought this up earlier in the week, and we talked about what the IHME had said earlier, like in the weekend, and then pulled those numbers back for the number of cases and ICU beds and all that. You've been processing that information at the mayor's office. What do you think from that?
So, Sean, it's going to sound very critical, but I think it's just, I see it as just the way it is that all of the projections have been wrong, okay? But that doesn't mean that these were incompetent people making the projections, but they've never had to do modeling for a pandemic. And if you just think about the modeling that we have going on for hurricanes every year, if you can recall in your mind's eye, the spaghetti maps of, you know, where it's going to land.
Mm-hmm.
And only as it gets closer and closer do the models get more accurate. And so if you take that and think about where we are in Mobile right now, there's modeling going on, and it's not just one company that thinks that we'll have a surge in the next 8 to 10 days. It'll be the 18th or the 20th. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if that really comes to pass, but there seems to be more people pointing toward that now than in the past. So that leads me to say that these next 8 to 10 days are crucial as far as how we individually act, as far as trying to sequester ourselves from, you know, spreading this disease.
So just doubling down on that shelter in place, explain to folks that have asked, and I had the question when I first heard it too, how does a curfew make a difference to the fight against the virus? Why?
Sean, you know, there are night owls out there in our society, and not just our community, but everywhere. And typically, places that they go, you know, there's not social distancing. And also, I think it's a mindset that really sends a message about how serious this thing is, and it's just another way for us to control and do it probably with the least intrusion on people's civil liberties, because there are not that many people out at night, okay? So you can control that group, and it's just like other groups that we've tried to control. And so, to me, it's a pretty easy one to do.
Mayor, obviously the stay-at-home order affecting so many of us here in Mobile County. I'm wondering, with the grocery stores and with the other large stores, your office asked all the stores to limit to 40% capacity initially and then down to 20% capacity. I'm wondering what went into that decision, and how are these stores doing with that new rule?
So, Sean, there's still some that are at the rule is still 40%, but they don't have 40%, then they're not, nobody's in there at capacity, okay? They're probably running in the 20 to 25% range. But this is unscientific, but we walk in, you can look, and you're no different than me. You can walk in and look and see if you feel safe in that store, if you see if they're doing control measures for social distancing, and it, either you get a good feeling about what they're doing or you don't. And so when we don't get a good feeling about it, and we don't think the management is doing right, then we figure out what can we get them to do, you know, to do better. But it's in their best interest to do it, because people want to go shop somewhere safe.
That's true. That's true. And I got to ask you, too, as we talk about the projections and now maybe the 20th of April, you said yesterday you got on the phone to the CEOs of local hospitals. What do you know about capacity?
Yeah. So to the person, all of them say that they feel very comfortable, even with a surge, that they will be able to handle the surge. And the reason they're saying that is they thought that they would have more beds being occupied right now than what they do have occupied. And so based on their occupancy and based on what they're seeing in their own testing, they say that we can handle it. The only thing that is something to be considered is, I'm going to take that's Mobile County. But what we don't know is, and I'm not sure they've factored this in, and I'll go back to all of them with this thought in mind, is what happens if Mobile becomes a place where a lot of the people from the kind of surrounding counties to the north, you know, Washington County, Clark, and Escambia and so forth, if they end up having to come to Mobile, you know, where are we then? And I'm not really sure we've thought that through, but we're in the process of trying to figure that out.
All right, just 1 minute left here. What about, you'd mentioned during the news break there, a unified command. How's that going to work? What does that look like?
Okay. So that's a disaster model that's used all across the nation for different disasters. We've probably actually used it in Mobile. But it's, every time there's a bad hurricane, it's stood up. Now, in this situation, it would be the Dr. Bert Ischel, Assyria Ludgood, the county commission, and myself. And we'll be meeting every morning at 9 o'clock virtually. It'll be the first time there's ever been a virtual unified command. But we have people out in the field, Captain Joe Snowden, who's compiling information to brief us with slide presentation, so that we can discuss issues and come together and make better decisions that impact the entire county.
All right, Mayor, we appreciate your time, and we'll be looking for the email tonight at 9 in the presser this afternoon and talk more going forward.
Well, we may take the night off, if you would just let people know. That doesn't mean that I've gotten the virus, but being Good Friday, we may take a night off.
It is Good Friday, that is for sure. Mayor Stimson, thanks for your time.
Good deal. Thank you so much, Sean.
All right. We'll be back in 3 for Midday Mobile.